journey into the Bible and explore its hidden text and rich wisdom. Join Adil Kazilski Mondays at 1 p.m. for the trip of a lifetime.
A beautiful good afternoon. It's Monday afternoon and I'm Adil Kazilski and sitting in the seat again, taking off a little bit of time in our busy lifestyle to learn some Torah with you. We are going through the Parsha of Yitro. We've had quite a long build-up discussing all the events, miracles, and things that happened at the giving of the Torah so that we can actually fundamentally understand what it is and how enormous this event was. In fact, it changed history. And really, at the end of the day, by receiving the Torah, not only did the Jewish people, but the entire world landed up having a moral compass now on which to provide the world with a moral basis on how we're supposed to live our lives. The Torah, for anybody who has learned, and this is something that I want to share as well, is that once we understand God's wisdom and we get reason and understanding as to why are we here, what are we expected to do, how are we to behave, what is right, what is wrong, once we have an absolute yardstick, then we are able to move along with our lives, okay, in a much more profound, a much more focused way than us actually just being philosophical about it and making up our own mind, because then everything is relative and who says what's right and who says what's wrong. By accepting the Torah, both the Jewish people and then by extension the world says that what is happening is that we subscribe to something much bigger than ourselves and we subscribe to He who created us. And what better person that we should listen to than He who created us, right? So I kind of like getting a washing machine and then deciding, well, you're not going to listen to the manufacturer's instructions. You're going to run the washing machine the way you want to run it. And inevitably, we know that when we do that, I just actually had that experience now, bought myself a new washing machine, didn't really read the instructions. I must admit, we ran it on a certain cycle that we thought was quick and fast and easy. And truthfully, 9 months down the line, we were told that we had destroyed the motherboard and the drum, because we had not paid attention to the instruction manual. So as human beings, the best way for us to navigate our lives is for us to follow the manufacturer's instructions. And the manufacturer's instructions, okay, is that which we get from God, from Har Sinai. Now, I'm going to start discussing the first of the commandments, but before then, one of the things that is very, very, very important for us to know, and this is something that is actually fundamental in Judaic thought, is that God, we are told in the Midrash, asked for a guarantee around the idea that we are going to be responsible and we are going to ensure and pass on the traditions down the line. And the Midrash actually gives a parable. And I'm going to tell you the parable and then we're going to derive from there. It says that once was a king, he had a field and he wanted to give it away. So the first person to whom he offered the field said, yeah, look, I like your field a lot, but I'm not able to take care of it properly. So God said, the king said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to give it to you. And so the king went and found somebody else and then found somebody else, because he kept on receiving the same answer. Several people had said, we like your field, but no, I'm not going to look after it properly. Finally, the king found somebody who agreed to take the field. And the king said to him, I'm giving you this field on condition that you give it all the necessary care. And this recipient said, yes. Anyway, time passed and the person who had taken the field began to act as if he knew nothing about it. The field became overgrown. He wasn't tending to it at all. And needless to say, he neither did he plow the field, neither did he sow things. Eventually, the Midrash says, with whom should the king be angry? with the ones who initially refused to take responsibility for the field, or for the one who accepts the responsibility but did not keep it? And the answer is based, this parable is based actually on another story that I mentioned in a previous podcast, that God went around to all the nations of the world, and none of the nations of the world wanted to receive the Torah. He went to the one group, I can't remember, it was the Ishmaelim, and he said, "Do you want to receive the Torah?" And they said, "No, because what does it say in it? Do not steal. Hey, we steal for a living." And he went to another nation, and what does it say in it? It says, "Do not kill. Are you kidding us? We're murderers. We don't want to keep it." And so nation upon nation upon nation was offered the Torah. And they all said no because they couldn't ascribe, they couldn't keep to the rigidity, to the laws of the Torah. When the Jewish people were offered the Torah, they said, "Naaseh v'nishma, let us do and let us hear." And we took on responsibility. When the Torah is not kept, who's going to have to take that responsibility? The Jewish people. So the idea over here is that responsibility is a very, very big part of this conversation. That as Jews, whether you like it or not, if you were born Jewish, you bear the responsibility of keeping the Torah. We also bear responsibility for each other. As we know, the Torah says, Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze Lazeh, that every Jew is responsible one for another. So the idea of responsibility is a huge one, and it's a discussion we even have to today. We are fighting against so much evil in this world. We are fighting against things which are so wrong, and it is our responsibility to maintain and be the light unto the nations. And despite the rhetoric and despite all the negativity that comes our way, we need to ascribe to what the Torah wants. Primarily today, the fight is for the value of life and for the ability for people to have life and promote life. And when we are up against people who believe that in death, that is when they land up getting their paradise, it's absolutely completely opposite ideas. And so as the Jewish people, we have taken on the idea of, not the idea, we have taken on the responsibility of promoting godliness, morality, light, and goodness into the world. And whether you like it or not, as a Jewish person, you're obligated to step up to the plate, or else we are going to be held responsible. Just like the guy who took the field from the king, he understood the terms and conditions. And if he did not fulfill the terms and conditions, then the king could definitely have recourse against him.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
There's one other idea about responsibility, and that is, when you enter into an agreement, many, many times there's a surety clause, and you promise things one to each other, but generally people want to know that they have the guarantee. And the same thing happened when it came to the giving of the Torah. Okay, God said to the Jewish people, "Okay, you're willing recipients, you're happy to enter into the agreement, but where's my surety? Who's going to guarantee that this gift that I'm giving you, this wisdom of Torah, this operating manual?" That will tell you the truth about why you're here in this world, what you're supposed to do, what your mission is, your purpose, and how to fulfill it. What guarantee have I got that you're going to keep it? So initially, it says the Jewish people said to God, "Well, let our forefathers be our security." What good surety is that? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, they themselves came to know you, and they created the Jewish people. Let our forefathers be the security. And we're told that God refused. Well, the Jewish people brought down a second surety. What about the prophets? The prophets are people, men of God, people who understand you, who know you, who prophesy all the time. Our prophets can be your surety. God refused. What about our sages, all the Torah scholars, all the great thinkers, the Rambams and Rambans and Unculus and all the great leaders that we've had throughout generations? They can be your surety. Nope, said God. Finally, the Jewish people had one last offer, and the offer was, let our children be the guarantors. Let we pledge our children to be the guarantee. And God said, that I am going to accept, and for their sake, I will give you the Torah. Okay. Why is it that God accepted this? Like, surely Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob fall and have much far greater weight than our children. And the answer is, this is the secret of Jewish survival. This is why we have survived for thousands of years. It's because we place so much emphasis on our children. We place emphasis on bringing into this world the next generation. We place emphasis on passing our traditions to the next generation. And that has guaranteed the Jewish people's survival. It has guaranteed our relationship with God. It's guaranteed our relationship with the land of Israel. And all these three things, Torah, the Jewish people, and God, are inextricably connected. So by us giving our children as the guarantors, what we were doing is that we were guaranteeing our invincibility. And, you could sit and argue backwards and forwards. We have been probably the most oppressed people in history, okay? The most oppressed people. I don't believe that people have oppressed, well, the world, the nations of the world have oppressed a singular people more than the Jewish people. Whether it was in Egypt, whether it was in Rome, whether it was in Greece, whether it was the Khmelnytskyi massacres, whether it was the Spanish expulsion, whether it was the Holocaust, whether it is right now. We are chased by the nations trying to smother us, shout us down for being the people of light and the people of morality because we signed a contract with God. We've taken responsibility. We love life. We promote life. We have children and we pass it on to our children. The bottom line is that that's been the secret of our survival. That God has looked after us because we have stepped up to our responsibility. So there you have it. Our children are foremost and the most importantly, those people that we need to ensure that the wisdom of Torah and the understanding and the traditions that we have are passed on to the next generation. Just received a message from a guest, unnamed, but says, on behalf of the Gentiles, we shall listen and we shall obey. And thank you. This is all about not only the Jewish people listening, it is for the Gentiles listening. And we know that there, as we spoke last week, there are 620 commandments. 613 of them belong to the Jewish people. It's far more rigorous. And there are seven Noahide laws that the Gentiles are asked to keep, which keep the fabric of society around them. Do not murder and do not steal and set up courts of law, etc., etc. You can look them up or you can go back and listen to my previous podcast. It's time now to get stuck into the first commandment. And we're not going to finish it up, but I'm going to start showing you the fundamentals of why the commandments were said the way they were said and why they were said that way. So we're looking at chapter 20, verse 2 of the book of Exodus. And here is the first verse. I'm going to read it in Hebrew, then translate in English. Anochi, I am, Hashem Elokecha, God your Lord. Asher hotzitticha me'eretz Yisrael, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, mi beit avadim, from the house of slaves. Subtotal of the first sentence, the way God introduced himself and demanded people to listen to him. I am the Lord your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt, from the house of slaves. Now, There's many, many, many questions that we can ask around it, and I'm going to pose them and hopefully answer them all. Firstly, why is the first word of the Ten Commandments, I am, which we translate in English, but we have to look into the original Hebrew to understand, is in fact not Hebrew. Anochi is not a Hebrew word. It is an Egyptian word. It is the Egyptian word for I am. Now, if you're a God and you're about to reveal yourself to the entire world, and your primary language and through which the whole world was created is the Hebrew language, why are you introducing yourself through the Egyptian word Anochi, I am? Surely you should have used the Hebrew word Ani. That's question number one. Then it says, I am the Lord your God. And how do you identify yourself? By He who brought us out of the land of Egypt and who brought us out from the house of slavery. Now, again, let's try almost, if we could, put ourselves in the shoes of the good Lord. You're revealing yourself to the world for the first time. Before that, there was no revelation. As magnanimous and huge and tumultuous as this, and never has there been a revelation like this again. Here's your one opportunity to introduce yourself and to get all those millions of people, as we've spoken about for the last couple of weeks. They heard God, they saw God, they felt God, they died every time they heard God speak it. The revelation was so powerful. And you introduce yourself as the God who took you out of the land of Egypt and the house of slavery. Surely it would have been a better idea to go and say, I am the Lord your God who created the world. Doesn't that give far more power than a God who took me out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery? Surely it's more pertinent if every single Jew, every single Gentile has to listen to the Bible, that you speak in far more objective viewpoint. Why do you have to be a moral human being? Because I am the Lord your God who created heaven and earth. That's why you listen to me. I'm the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. I could argue that it's not pertinent to me. You didn't take me out of the land of Egypt. I don't need to listen to you. Why did God use specifically the idea that he took us out of Egypt? And he took us out of a house of slavery. And why the repetition? Because surely if you took us out of Egypt, you took us out of slavery. That was the whole point, right? The other question that we could have is that if God maybe didn't want to say, I am the Lord your God who created heaven and earth, maybe you should have gone, I am the Lord your God who created you as a fetus in your mother's stomach. I gave birth to you. Even that would be a lot more personal. So if being the God of heaven and earth is like too large, too wide, I can't wrap my mind around it, well then I'm the Lord your God who created you. That's why you have to listen to me. So it strengthens the question even more as to why God introduces himself and remains as that introduction, as the magnus opus of the Ten Commandments. That he took us out of the land of Egypt and out of slavery. Well, firstly, we need to understand the following, that God was giving us a much more powerful lesson than I'm the Lord your God who created heaven and earth. Because when we look into the Bible and we try to understand everything about the world and particularly about the genesis of the Jewish people, you will see that many, many commandments, not only this commandment, I'm the Lord your God, which by the way talks around the fact that you have to believe in a God. Okay? But not only this commandment, but many of our commandments are connected to the going out of Egypt. We put on tefillin to remember the going out of Egypt. We eat matzah because we've got to remember going out of Egypt. We said many times talk about whichever mitzvah it is, Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, in remembrance of the going out of Egypt. So it's got to be, and we've got to understand that this going of out of Egypt must have been far more profound than just the physical exit of a people out of a land of slavery and coming to a mountain and receiving a Torah. Just by the way, the Exodus is mentioned more than 50 times in the Torah. 50 times. Okay. So what is so profound? And the truth be said, it is very profound. Because the land of Egypt and the worship of the Egyptian people, which was completely an idolatrous, immoral, decadent society. And the leaving of the house of slavery has a very profound effect on every person. Because we are commanded every single day, Leman tizkor et yom tzeitecha me'eretz Mitzrayim kol yemei chayecha. You're to remember the going out of Egypt every day of your life. Why is that? Well, I'm sure for a lot of people listening out there, you will know that Egypt in the Kabbalistic books, in many of our writings, Egypt, the word Egypt, Mitzrayim, also means Meitzarim, constraints. And what God is really telling us is that life is a path of free choice. Every day we are challenged to come out of our constraints. Our constraints not only mean physical ones where we are locked up in the prison and we need to get out. Yes, there are those constraints. Right now, our hostages are constrained physically in the depths of Gaza and they need to be freed physically. So there is that concept. But more profoundly, and for the majority of people who thank God are not in the position of people like the hostages, we are imprisoned. We are imprisoned in our own Egypts. We're imprisoned by our thoughts. We're imprisoned by our perceptions. We're imprisoned by our bad habits. We're imprisoned by the very idols that we worship. Oh. You don't worship idols? Oh, yes, you and I and the world do. Those idols are called peer pressure. Those idols are called status. Those idols are called money. Those idols are called fashion. Those idols are called addictions. Those idols are called all the stuff that we really struggle with. And we serve them. We wake up in the morning and we try to make much more money. Why? So that we can get this and we can get that, and maybe I'll be accepted like this and maybe I'll do that. And so life is one big Mitzrayim. It's one big Egypt where every single day we are forced to look at our lives and decide which things are constraining us, which things are we worshipping, and we need to move out of them. And the only way we can move out, the only way we can be freed of these shackles is to realize I am the Lord your God, that there is a God. Because if I do not believe in a God, then everything is relative. I could decide that today murder is good and go out and murder people because I think that I've worked it out in my mind that murdering is good or stealing. Or standing on somebody and being dishonest in business, or committing adultery, or doing any one of the not nice, good, not nice things that Torah says you shouldn't. And that's how the Egyptians ran their lives. They had so many gods. They worshipped so many things. They were the best at black magic. They believed in the most bizarre, ridiculous ideas. They all but negated the understanding that there was a power far greater than them. Pharaoh himself was worshipped as a god. If you know very clearly, the first time that Moses went down to go and tell them about the first plague, he had to go to the River Nile early in the morning. Why? Because that's when Pharaoh went to the Nile to relieve himself. Because he didn't want people to know that he, in fact, was human. Because which god requires a lavatory? Right? That's where he caught him, at the Nile, very early in the morning when the whole of Egypt was fast asleep. Because they believed Pharaoh was God. They believed in the lamb, it was a god. They believed in money and in power and enslavement and all the negative things. So yesterday, maybe we don't have a pharaoh in the majority of our lives, but we do have our challenges and our obstacles, and the only way to navigate them through them is to know Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am the Lord your God. He's the one that put us in these situations in order for us to navigate our way out and make the free choice of what is right and what is wrong. And we need to stop serving our idols. It's unbelievably powerful. And if you're intellectually honest with yourself, you will realize you might be worshipping by the bad habit of anger, or fear, or having some type of addiction, or being dishonest, or really doing things far worse than all of those put together. And that is because you don't have a belief in God. You don't realize that there's somebody much higher than yourself that is guiding you, watching you, waiting for you to learn, and you think you can be better with your own devices. So, saying I'm the Lord your God who created heaven and earth, that could be far too distant for me. You're too way too big, and I'm not going to negotiate with you. To say I'm the Lord your God who created you in the womb of your mother, you can become very personal. But it's still that happened 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. But when I say I'm the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt, and that you should remember the going out of Egypt every day of your life, even in the very mitzvahs that you do, you're reminded to remember Egypt. It is a daily reminder that we have to go out of our constraints, of the challenges and obstacles that hinder us. We need to find a way to redemption. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
Welcome back, and we're talking about the first commandment of the Torah. I just want to emphasize one more point and then move on. Why does it say, I'm the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt and from the house of slavery? Because it's not only being confined, it's being enslaved, which is far more powerful than just being constrained. Enslavement means I'm enslaved to my addiction, I'm enslaved to my anger, I'm enslaved to my thought processes. I'm enslaved to a bad relationship. I'm enslaved. You can fill in the blanks. And so, the fundamental of this world, the purpose, the mission of this world is to transcend slavery, to transcend being constrained by the various pressures that the world is giving us. And to realize that I am the Lord your God, that there is a God. There is. And for anybody who does not think so, what is the alternative? You should definitely categorically come to it on your own to understand that there is a God. But what is the alternative? Who do you, what are you doing here? What is your purpose? Do you believe that you're just a random act of a big bang and that then you spend 80, 90, 100 years in this world and then you just disappear in a puff of smoke? If you start really intellectually, honestly trying to understand it, you've got to come to the conclusion that there is nothing but the fact that there is something far greater than all of us. Right. I want to discuss now, why did God go and use the word Anochi? Anochi being a Egyptian word. Now, one of the things that we learn is that Egypt, okay, and we call it Mi Beit Avadim, from the house of slaves. Who were the Egyptians? The Egyptians were descendants of the son of Noah by the name of Ham. He had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Yafet. Okay, when the world was destroyed in the time of Noah, we know that him and his three sons got into the ark, and they were the only humanity that was saved. When they came out of the ark, they married, and I mean, they were with their wives, they procreated, okay, and that's how the world was repopulated. The descendants of Shem, and you can follow it up all in the Bible, eventually gave birth to Abraham, to Abraham, who gave birth to Isaac, who gave birth to Jacob, who gave birth to the Jewish people. The descendants of Japheth are the descendants of the Gentile nations, particularly the ones that you find in Europe. Japheth comes from the word Yafé, nice, beautiful. And again, there is a lot of literature written on it. The Greeks, for example, are descendants of Japheth, and so do the majority of the European world. The descendants of Ham, okay, if you go look back in Genesis, I think it's chapter 10, verse 6. It says, and the sons of Ham were Mitzrayim, Put, and Canaan. And they were cursed by Noah to be the slave of slaves to their brothers. So the Egyptians are descendants of the third son, Ham. And they were unfortunately cursed to be slaves of slaves. Why? Because Ham broke the covenant in the ark. What was the covenant? The covenant was that the husbands and wives should separate, that there should be no physical intimacy, because one cannot procreate, one cannot have pleasure in this world when the entire world is being destroyed. Ham didn't listen, and he was intimate with his wife. And so when they came out of the ark, his father cursed him to be a slave of slaves to his brothers, which means that the descendants, Mitzrayim, okay, that the Egyptians were accursed people. They were probably one of the lowliest people on earth in terms of the way they behaved, in the way that they carried themselves, in their morality. In fact, we know that it says that the Jewish people stooped down to the 49th gate of impurity. While in Egypt, and had God not had mercy, we would have slipped to the 50th and become unredeemable. Now, why am I telling you all of this? Because that is the reason why God uses the word Anochi, which is an Egyptian word. It's an oxymoron. I am, which represents essence, telling you that I am the Lord your God, but I'm using I am in an Egyptian manner, to say to us today that that the way of the world is that sometimes we will find ourselves at the bottom of the pit, at the lowliest point in the world, where we could be as immoral as negative, as wrong as everything, like the Egyptians. But it's even in there that we find Hashem Elokecha, the Lord your God. And is it not true that so many people land up finding out their purpose, their truth, their connection to God when we are put in the lowest of lowest places? And that is the message again of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am the Lord your God. You have to remember that the Lord your God can even be found in the dungeons of Gaza. And how many of our hostages have come out who, before going into Gaza, were not necessarily observant Jews, but who speak about an unshakable faith when they're found in the darkest of places? This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
So there you have it, is one part of the discussion of why the opening words, the magnus opus of the Ten Commandments, is I am in Egyptian, meaning even in the darkest place, even in a level as low as Egypt, and everything and the metaphor around it, you can find the Lord your God, and that you have to walk out of Egypt every single day of your life. You have to stop being a slave to your bad habits, to your addictions, to your bad mentalities, whatever it is. Everybody has their challenges, and this is the way that God becomes very personal to us, because God is giving us the Torah every single day. Every single day, we need to subscribe to a moral compass, something that is far greater than us, whether it is when it's coming to a relationship with someone, whether it is raising our children, whether it is in business, whether it is in health, whether it is in anything. When we ask the question, what does God demand of us? And it's not the God of my understanding, but how I understand God, when I learn the Torah and understand what God wants of me, then we can be moral human beings. That's the food for thought for this week. We will continue next week. Thank you so much for joining. This is Adel Kozulski. This is 101.9 Chai FM.